Hey everybody, Steve Miller, better known as Kelly's Dad, Marketing Gunslinger. Thanks again for joining us. Got a lot of people on here. This is a lot of people. We didn't know because we're talking about a topic that I am a total specialist in. I'm absolutely kidding. I have no idea. This is all about financials, actually Ruth and I got connected a while ago. She's been doing some stuff with my smoking hot wife Kay, and we got to talking and we said, you know what, this would be a great topic for you guys, is to talk about financials. So here we are with the profitability master herself, Ruth King, who she is. And you know what, you gotta love people who are passionate about what they do. Ruth is absolutely passionate about money, finances, profitability in particular. That's what she wants. She wants to help you make more money. She has owned something like 8 businesses in the last 37 years. Sooner or later, one of these is going to work, right? You know, right, Ruth? But she travels all over the U.S. She's already back on the road again. She's been doing Business Ventures Corporation, her business, since 1981. And through this, she coaches, trains, helps contractors and others achieve business growth goals. You know, small businesses like you guys and big businesses, too, I'm sure that probably need the help, too, as well. So, Ruth, welcome to the IMTS Monthly Webinar. Once again, a question just popped up. The recording will be available probably tomorrow. And it will be online on the IMTS.com in the webinar library, okay? And I know you also have visuals, so I guess the question I should ask right away is, are we going to be able to get the visuals for the viewers too?
I will send them to you and you can put them up. How's that?
That would be great. We will put them up. So Ruth, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to actually share one of my passions, or my passion with, which is really profitability, and profitability is really continuous profit. And right now what I'm doing is I'm sharing my screen so that we can talk about financial statements in plain English, and we can go from there. I call myself Profitability Master. Steve always says you got to stand for something. Well, I stand for profitability, which is continuous profits, which means that you're able to take care of your business and your business can take care of itself, growth and profit. I do not do anything that's personal financials. I don't do stocks, I don't do bonds, or anything's personal. Mine is all about business, right? So what we're going to do today is we're going to cover the two main financial statements that you have, which are profit and loss statements and balance sheet. And then I'm going to tell you how, just to take a look at how your financial statements are wrong in less than 97 seconds. Now, don't put a stopwatch on me because it's going to be explained.
I already told her I was going to time her, but
you can do this in 97 seconds. The explanation, I promise you, will take more than 97 seconds to get that done. So from that perspective, that's what we're going to do today. And, you know, when we think about it, a little bit about me. I've written 5 books. Profit or Wealth is my 5th book, which just is coming out in October. And Steve was gracious enough, and he and Kay were gracious enough to give me a quote for that book, so thank you very much for that.
Thumbs up on that book, that's for sure.
Yeah. The Courage to be Profitable and The Ugly Truth About Cash were 2 of 37 books that a British organization said all startup businesses should read. So I joined Stephen Covey and Napoleon Hill and Richard Branson and Dale Carnegie and a whole bunch of others. So I'm in the midst of really, really great writers, and that was a great honor for that to happen. But let's take a look at really what's going on. You know, why do you care? You know, the reality is that none of us started our business to do the financial side of business. We started it because you were passionate about providing product, passionate about providing service, and doing something for your customers because you love doing it. We didn't start, you know, the financial part of business really and truly wasn't something that you looked at, did, or even cared about generally until you got into trouble. You couldn't pay a bill. Customer decided, you know, that was 80% of your business, went away, you know, what are you going to do? You have no idea what pricing is. I mean, there's some things that happened that made you start to take advantage of and take a look at your P&L and your balance sheet. But if you look at them on a monthly basis, and if you look at it from a perspective of just doing it, it will take you less than 30 minutes a month to get it done. And all of us have 30 minutes somewhere in the month. And you're going to, doing that, you'll make good business decisions based on accurate information that your financial statements are telling you, all right? Now, here's the good news. I don't expect you to become a bookkeeper. That's not what you do. You are really good at doing what you do. You're not probably, unless you went to college to become, took 17,000 accounting courses, which I doubt many did, you to become a bookkeeper. I am actually a chemical engineer by training, and I got my MBA and realized that what they teach you in MBA school is really meant for really, really big businesses. It's not meant for small businesses like
that. I suspect there are a lot of engineers on this call right now.
Yeah. So the reality was is I had to take what I learned in MBA school and actually make it good for small businesses. And I found that I absolutely loved it. And so I've had many companies over the years. Steve said one of mine was actually a t-shirt company. And the whole goal of the t-shirt company was to design for the student chapters of professional organizations, colleges. What we wanted to do is we wanted to have our vacations paid for. So we did all the designing and wrote off all of our trips. And we did things like civil engineers give a damn. And we had the damn on the t-shirt. Chemical engineering is baffling because in plant baffles are where the flow goes. I mean, we did stuff like that. You know, Oma the Brave for an electrical. And those were just some of the things that we did. But, you know, our goal was obviously to make a profit, but also to get all of our vacations paid for. So, you know, we can do crazy things like that, or we can do things that allow you to make a profit. Again, I don't expect you to become a bookkeeper. That you hire out, right? But I do expect you to look at the financial statements that the bookkeeper actually creates for you, and you have to review them and take action. You can't abdicate the financial side of your business. Delegate the day-to-day work, but you know, your name on the bottom line, it's your name on the door. You physically have to pay attention to financials. It's part of business. Get it done. All right, so I'm going to talk initially about differences between P&Ls and balance sheets. P&Ls, profit and loss statements, they're sometimes called income statements, but most of us know them as P&Ls. They are for a specific period of time. You know, think about it. We've all had months that have been absolutely horrendous. And we're going, thank God that month is over. We can start over again. Or thank goodness that year is over. Let's have a better year in 2021. You know, whatever else it is, but P&Ls start at a certain time and they end at a certain time. They do not continue. Balance sheets are like, you know, the memory of the elephant. They started the day you started your business or bought your business. They'll end the day the stores are closed. It is done it's a continuous recording of what's going on in your business. And if you think about it, your balance sheet changes probably every day simply because your cash position changes every day. So if your cash changes, your balance sheet changes. So what financial statements actually do is they match P&L and balance sheet. So you take a snapshot of your balance sheet, now let's say on January 31st, and you match it with your P&L for January 31st so that you look at it and make sure that everything is consistent. You do the same thing on February 28th or 29th, leap year, March 31st, and things along the line. So we look at P&L's balance sheet, take a snapshot of the balance sheet. All right, so that's the difference between the two more than anything else. Quite frankly, most small business owners look at their P&Ls, and they don't necessarily look at their balance sheet, which is absolutely backwards, because your balance sheet tells you true profitability. And I will go through that as we get through here. All right, so let's start with P&L statements because you're probably more familiar with it. If you are departmentalized, each department has its own P&L. It is your scorecard. It tells you how you did for a specific month. So you had a great month, celebrate for 5 minutes, and get going on the next month. You have a bad month, get frustrated for about 5 minutes, and do better the following month because P&Ls start over every single month. Now, there are some really large car companies and some of the really, really big Fortune 500 who actually do a P&L every day. There's nothing that actually says you can't do a P&L every day. You could, but you know, we as small business owners look at it on a monthly basis, which is enough, and we go from there. The P&Ls, the thing that I have to make sure everybody understands is that P&Ls are profit or loss. It's not how much money you have in the bank. So at the end of the month, you say, you know, I had a profit of $6,000 or I had a profit of $106,000. And you look at your bank account and there's not that much money in there. It's dependent upon, we just had a plane go over, sorry about that. A P&L just tells you that revenues or sales were higher than expenses, and then you have a profit, or expenses were higher than revenue and you have a loss. It does not tell you how much money you have in the bank. You know, how many of you had your accountant, and it's tax season, the accountant said, oh, you made X number of dollars. You go like, where is it? You owe the IRS. Y number of dollars? You don't have it. This is what happens is your money gets tied up, your cash actually gets tied up in things that are accounts receivable. They're tied up in inventory. It may be in bills that you have to pay. You know, cash gets tied up, but cash is not profit. Cash is cash, which is a balance sheet item, and profit or loss is a profit loss statement item. Two are very, very different. Now, I agree. This time especially, cash is now emperor. It's not king. You've got to have cash to be able to survive, which means you have to have profitable work to build the cash. Okay? So your profit loss statement actually builds balance sheet. All right, the P&L itself, it's pretty easy. All of us have a calculator these days. And accounting was invented about 12 or 1300 by the Venetian monks who had to take care of the rich Italians' money, and they had to come up with something that was easy because they didn't have calculators. And everybody says, yeah, well, the Chinese had abacuses. Yeah, they did, but they're in a situation where the Chinese didn't talk to the Italians. So they had to make it addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and make it easy. And they did, and so the format for everything have not changed for, you know, more than 1,000 years. So we start with revenue, and we subtract out our cost of goods sold, and I'll explain where all these are. And then we have overhead, and then we have net operating profit, other income and expenses, and finally net profit. Then you get to pay your taxes. Right? Difference between revenue and sales. Right? Revenue is what did you sell that month. So for example, you know, you could have $1 million contract, which was the sale, but you only produced $200,000 of that contract in the month of July. So the revenue for July is actually what is there, not necessarily the entire selling price. And that's the difference between sales and revenue. And quite frankly, most companies call the two exactly the same. It really depends upon what you do. If you sell something and you produce it that month, each one is absolutely identical. It's not necessarily what did you collect. It is what did you sell. Or what did, you know, what revenues did you produce. And the thing that I talk about is making budget. And did you make budget? If you said we were going to sell $100,000 a month, do it. And the other thing that I talk a lot about and is recurring revenue. Okay, now, what do you guys do for recurring revenue? What recurring revenue is, what can you count on every single month coming in the door? And you know, with COVID-19 and all the things that have happened there, most of my clients who had a lot of recurring revenue actually didn't have to worry as much about things because they had money coming in the door every single month for products and services that they actually did. Now, one thing that's kind of interesting is like, well, what can I do for recurring revenue? And I started thinking about it. And if, let's say that you're a bathtub manufacturer, and I don't know whether any of you out there are manufacturing bathtubs, what can you do for recurring revenue? Now, you might actually do the recurring revenue, or you might help your customers do the recurring revenue. So let's say you sell the bathtubs to a distributor or a supplier, or actually sell them to, you know, a customer. Recurring revenue for a bathtub manufacturer might be bubble bath. It might be interesting soaps from around the world. Now I'm trying to, you know, I was trying to come up with things that might actually be fun to do, But, you know, let's say you sell a bathtub and you give the customer an opportunity to invest at, you know, $20 a month or whatever it is, and they can buy bathtubs or they can buy bubble bath for their kids. Revenue that you get every single month in the door, whether or not you sell a bathtub. You may be able to do this. You may have to go to some of your distributors, suppliers to help them do this. But, you know, think about it. For every bathtub you ever sold, you start getting money in the door every month as a result of it. That, to me, is just an idea of recurring revenue and things to do.
Well, I have to say that I think that for most of the people, you know, on here, recurring revenue is not really something that they think about. So I would just say that, and especially in light of what we've gone through now with the coronavirus and how hard businesses have been hit, is that coming out of this, and quite frankly, you know, even though I do a lot of consulting, you know, in this industry, and it's mainly, you know, marketing and branding and stuff like that, I'll be perfectly honest. I have not really given very much thought to how can they generate recurring revenue. So I think so it's a very unusual question to ask, but I think it's a very relevant question to ask, which would require probably some pivoting in the thinking.
It's not something that you normally think about, but the reality of it is something, let's assume that you couldn't manufacture one product, but you had recurring revenue coming in the door. And I do this with all of my clients. I had several of them at the beginning of this saying, quite frankly, whatever happens, I know that every month I'm getting X number of dollars in the door because of what recurring revenue you've made me generate. You know, if we think about it, if we belong to a gym, if we have a Netflix subscription, if we have, you know, anything where we pay monthly, if you do software as a service, you're paying monthly, and that's recurring revenue for that particular company. You're in a situation where you can actually do recurring revenue. And Steve, you're right. You've got to think about it. But, you know, let's assume that as coming out of this thing, you ask your customers what they want, and you find a way to do this, and the entire overhead of your company gets covered by recurring revenue.
Yeah.
What would happen?
Yeah. Lynn just brought up a good point that I didn't think about, saying that maintenance agreements from machine tool builders is an example of recurring revenue. So definitely there's, you know, it does exist. Something like that does exist. And I think that, thank you, Lynn, for sharing that, you know, should have thought of that. You know, but certainly that's something that I think that would be a great topic. Actually, having a full program about for this industry of the different types, ways to come up with recurring revenue.
Since you do branding and you do all the marketing things, add this to your list. And I'm happy to help you offline or whatever and tell you what some of the things that we've done over the years and take it to the industry.
We will.
There's no reason in the world why you have the entire overhead of your company covered by recurring revenue.
It makes
your life so much easier.
Okay, I got my idea.
All right, that's cool. All right, so let me go on here.
No,
that's fine. But I want you to think about the different types of revenue and different things, and that's why I bring this up.
Yeah.
So that you can start that conversation, can start that thought process. If you can do maintenance agreements, that's phenomenal. That's your source of recurring revenue. If there's something like, you know, I talked about bubble bath and soap, you know, it might be something like that. It just, you know, think about it and expand your mind to be able to do those types of things.
Right.
All right. So that's the revenue side of it. Cost of goods sold are sometimes called direct expenses. And it's an expense that you incur because you sold something. It's going to be materials. It's going to be labor. It's going to be parts and equipment. And if you have commissions or spiffs, which are you pay your employees because they achieve a specific goal. If they're involved with talking to your customers about recurring revenue, you might give them a small piece for everyone that they enroll. There's lots of things like that and freight. The only reason you have a cost of goods sold expense is because you sold things. right? That's it. Don't sell it. There's no expense there. That's why commissions are in cost of goods sold. They're not in overhead, because you don't pay a commission unless you sell something. All right. So I want you to watch out when you're doing cost of goods sold, whether there's materials waste, if there's unbillable labor. So for example, if you're paying your employees to go to a training class, if you're paying them for vacation, if you're paying them for holidays, you know, any type of sick days or things like that, that's unbillable labor and it belongs to overhead. So make sure that it's there. If there's excessive freight charges, you kind of have to watch it and make sure that you pay attention to those types of things. All right, what I also call financial statement fruit salad, which is drives me insane. So for example, if you have revenue in one month and you put the revenue there, but the expenses against that revenue are in another month. So the month you have revenue is apples, and we have the expenses in it's oranges, and you put the two together so that you know what your job costing is, you have fruit salad. Don't work. You want to have apples and apples, oranges and oranges. So you want to make sure that you have revenue and you have expenses against that revenue in exactly the same month, right? And then you want to make sure that your material expenses are on a job and are not in inventory, right? So you just there's just a few things to watch out there. All right, so gross profit and gross margin. And people get confused about that a little, so I just want to take a minute and talk about it. Gross profit is revenues minus cost of goods sold. And gross margin is gross profit divided by sales. Gross profit is always dollars. Gross margin is always the percentage. So your gross profit can go up and down, but your gross margin, if you're pricing consistently, will always be the same number. So depending upon how busy or slow you are, profits will be up and down, but your margin, if you're pricing the same way, will be exactly the same percentage. And I want to show you something about why gross margin really and truly don't matter. I'm just going to take a minute to do this, except in one specific instance. Whenever I start working with a new client, I pull 20 jobs. And the customers are over on the left. The selling price, GP is gross profit, GM is gross margin, OH per hour is overhead per hour, number of hours, net profit per hour. So I look at everything for every billable hour, how much drops to the bottom line. And that's what your net profit per hour means. So if you look at the first customer, JE, their gross margin was 40.51%. And their net profit per hour was $73.34. If we go down 8 to HT, the sell price was $56.44. Their gross margin was 40.27%. And not much different than 40.51%. And they basically paid the customer $21.37 to do the job. Same gross margins, very different profitability. So we look at it, and the only thing that gross margins matter, quite frankly, is that they are consistent. You have to consider overhead, have to make sure that you have a reasonable net profit per hour. That's not the subject of this webinar, but I just wanted to introduce that to you so that you can start thinking about it. It's the details are in one of my books, The Courage to be Profitable. I go through this in a whole lot of detail so that you can really see what you're making. So your gross margin, again, should be consistent every month. Your gross profit can vary from month to month. And each member of your team, depending upon if they're doing different things, like whoever mentioned the maintenance agreements, the person who's handling the maintenance agreements probably is going to have a different gross margin than the person who is actually producing the work, whatever. So different in production will have different gross margins. All right, the next thing is overhead, and that's the expenses you incur to stay in business. And each department gets their piece of overhead, the rent, utilities, reception, unemployed labor, marketing, advertising, all those things that are on the bottom line after gross profit. So you just physically have to, you know, pay for all those things just to keep your doors open. So net profit is just simply, net operating profit is just simply gross profit minus overhead. You have something that is other income and expense. And here's how I explain other income and expense. Other income could be you have a savings account with your business, you get 2 cents worth of interest. That income of 2 cents is interest, but it didn't happen because you had operations. Another expense might be that you sold a piece of equipment, and on your balance sheet it said the equipment was worth $1,000, and you only got $800 for it. So that extra $200 is another expense. Again, it didn't have to do with operations. And then you subtract it and you get net profit, right? So basically, this is it. You know, if you've got a manager, a department manager is responsible just for desired net operating profit. Revenues minus cost of goods sold, gross profit, subtract out your overhead, and you have a departmentalized or a company net operating. All right, so that's P&L. I want to go through balance sheets really quickly. And I get this question all the time. I never look at the balance sheet. In fact, I never print the report out of QuickBooks. The only thing I care about is my P&L. Remember that your P&L starts and stops every single month. So you don't have an idea of what true profitability is unless you look at your balance sheet. So your balance sheet is, you know, is the recording of the day, you know, from the time you started your business to the time that your business ends. So it will give you true profitability. Your balance sheet also answers, can you pay your bills? Are you building up too much inventory? Are you headed for a collection problem? And are you building up too much debt? So these are the things that your balance sheet actually tell you. And you're looking at a balance sheet going, how in the world is that telling me this? Well, there's an answer to that. So balance sheets are simply assets that are equal to liabilities plus net worth, right? Assets are things of value, and they're divided into current assets and long-term assets. Current assets are cash or things that are turned into cash here. Long-term assets are the the equipment, it's the machinery, it's you've got trucks, it's your office, you know, furniture and fixtures, stuff like that. It basically is there. You can see your long-term assets or your fixed assets. Your cash, yeah, it's in the bank. Your receivables, yeah, it's, you know, it's there, but it's not something that you generally see, but it turns into cash. Liabilities have something that's very similar to assets. You have current liabilities, which have to be paid within a year, and long-term liabilities, which are things that, you know, you take out a bank note for a piece of equipment. You know, 1 year's, and it's a 5-year note, 1 year is due within a year, the other four are into long-term liabilities. All right, so current assets are things that are cash or turned into cash in a year. The long-term or fixed assets are what I call the stuff. All right, so we got current assets, long-term assets. Liabilities, same thing. Current liabilities, long-term liabilities. Things you got to pay within a year, and things that, you know, you're saddled your company with for a really long time. All right, net worth, equity, capital, it's called stockholders' equity, stockholders' capital, you know, it's called net worth, stock, whatever. I call it the fudge factor, simply because nobody looks at this anymore except maybe large corporations, but most small businesses don't, they're not sold, they're not bought based on net worth, they're bought based on assets more so than anything else, and customers. But the reality is, if you were going to close your doors tomorrow, theoretically, you would turn all of your assets cash, pay all of your bills, and what would be left would be your net worth. All right. It never out that way. Ever, ever, ever. Think about it. If you've got inventory, you're going to sell your business. You don't get the full value of inventory. You just don't. It doesn't happen. All right. So a balance sheet is just assets equal to liabilities plus net worth. So this is how we find that you're profitable and profitability is increasing. So with balance sheets, what we do at the end of every month is we create a whole bunch of ratios, which are 10. They're easy to do. They're in the book. I explain it. I can send you more info if you want it. Your current ratio is probably, I'm only going to go through two, because these are the two, in my opinion, are the two most critical. Current ratio is equal to current assets divided by current liabilities, which are things that are turned into cash here, things that have to be paid. Okay? Increasing current ratio usually increasing profitability, decreasing current ratio usually means decreasing profitability, except with PPP loans. Okay? Think about it this way. You got money in the door. You got this, if, for those of you who got the PPP loans, you got this huge dollars in the door, but your current liabilities didn't change because it is a long-term loan. So you got all this cash in the door, liabilities are the same, so your current ratio increases. And it's increasing for a false thing. And if you look at it, there are times when you write a big check to pay your taxes, your current liabilities changed, so your current ratio went down, and it had nothing to do with profitability. Those are the two real exceptions, but on a day-in and day-out basis, your current ratio, generally increasing current ratio is increasing. All right, this is the critical P&L ratio. It's called compensation percentage or productivity ratio. And it basically answers the question, for every dollar you take in the door in sales, how much are you paying in payroll taxes? So it's total payroll plus payroll taxes, which are just FICA, Medicare, state and federal unemployment. It does not include workers' comp or health insurance or any bonuses that you may be paying. And it's simply, you want it to be as low as possible. If your compensation percentage is 80%, that means 80 cents for every dollar that you're taking in the not a really good idea if you're going to be profitable.
Yeah, Ruth, you froze for just a second there as you were saying like 80%. If it was 80%, what'd you say again?
If your compensation percentage is 80%, that means if every dollar you take in the door, 80 cents of that dollar is going to payroll and payroll taxes. And that is not a really good idea if you want to have a profitable company.
Right.
It doesn't work. And you want this compensation percentage to be as low as you possibly can have it, right? That's essentially where you want to go, okay? And those are the two critical ratios that I track every month. Now, if you want more, either send me an email, and I'm happy to give you all the ratios, and I've got my email at the end of this. It's also in all of my books, too, so it's there. All right, so remember that your P&L is for a specific period of time and starts over again, and your balance sheet started the day you started your business. Going to end the day that you close your door. All right, so I promised you at the end of this that I would tell you places to look if your financial statement's wrong, and you can do this in less than 97 seconds. Remember that I don't want you to become the bookkeepers. I want you to basically look at what the bookkeepers do and make sure that it is accurate. So what we really are looking at, you know, I had a bookkeeper come into one of my clients who actually understands P&L's balance sheet and give him a balance sheet that didn't balance. And the owner looked at him and said, never again give me a balance sheet that doesn't balance. And he says, oh, so you can read these things. He goes, yeah, I can. All right. So there are things that we just want to make sure that do happen or that don't happen. So number one, your financial statements need to be reported on an accrual basis for the day-to-day operations of your business. If you want to file your taxes on a cash basis, that's between you and your accountant, okay? But on a day-to-day basis, it's on an accrual basis. And what does that mean? That means that you count a sale when you actually get the invoice, and you count an expense when you actually get the bill in for the expense. You have accounts on a cash basis, the only time you count a sale is when you get the all right, so let's just do it this way, and I'll just talk through it. Since it's
yeah,
not
just read through
here.
It. Just read through it, and then we'll share the.
We'll share everything from that perspective.
Okay.
Later on. So cash versus accrual basis is you want to make sure you're on an accrual basis, and if you want to file your taxes, you can file your taxes on a cash basis. That's between you and your account. But we need accounts receivable, we need accounts payable, and we need to know that revenues match expenses, and that's the only way you can do it is if you're on an accrual basis. That's number one. Number two is the balance sheet does not balance. Your assets have to match your liabilities plus your net worth. That doesn't balance, somebody's playing games. It really and truly is. Okay? Next one is there's negative cash on your balance sheet. You cannot have negative cash on your balance sheet. You always have to have a penny in the bank. What happens a lot of times is that bookkeepers get lazy and they print out all the checks that have to be paid that month, and they're sitting on their desk at the end of the month because not enough cash has come in to cover all of those checks. Only print out a check when you have the cash to be able to pay it. So that's what negative cash on your balance sheet means. Just you have to have a penny in the bank, at least, otherwise the banker's going to bounce checks, and you're going to have lots of fees and things along those lines. Next one, number four, is negative payroll taxes on your balance sheet. You cannot have negative payroll taxes unless you overpaid the feds, you're overpaid the state, which is not normal. Generally, there's been a mistake in the way that payroll taxes are being accounted for. Next one is loan payments on your balance sheet. And generally what happens, this is the case, that the bookkeeper, instead of when you're paying a loan payment, part of its principal and part of its interest, taking everything as a principal payment rather than putting the interest on the P&L, which it belongs, and then the balance sheet takes care of the principal or the loan. Because the bank doesn't owe you money for your loan. You owe the bank money for your loan. Next thing is there's no inventory. Your inventory is the same every month. You have to have inventory. Inventory is the stuff, you know, it's a bet. Make sure that you're tracking yours really, really well. Next one is there's no rent or unusually high rent on your profit and loss statement. You pay your rent every month. A lazy bookkeeper just looks at it from a perspective, oh, so what? If I put 2 months of rent in February and then in January, who cares? You got to make sure that everything is accurate every single month. So February has 2 months of rent and January has none, we got a problem. And then again, if you have negative gross margins or unusually high gross margins, you know, a negative gross margin means you bought a product for $1 or you bought a part for $1 and you sold it for 50 cents. Doesn't work that way. I love technology. It is so much fun.
There we go.
All right. So let's see. Let's go back to start here with the financial statements reported on a basis there.
There you go.
There we go. All right. So we went through financial statements on an accrual basis that they have to be on. We talked about the balance sheet doesn't balance and negative cash on your balance sheet, negative payroll taxes on your balance sheet. Loan payments on your balance sheet should not be negative. We went through all of those. And inventory. Inventory is your bet. You're spending your hard-earned dollars on inventory, and you got to make sure that you're making really, really good bets on inventory. We could have a whole webinar on inventory. No rent or unusually high rent.
What were you saying about that? Because you said that you said something about if your bookkeeper or somebody says, oh, I'll just throw 2 months on, or what do you mean by that?
All right. That is basically looking at it from a perspective of bookkeeper basically says, okay, I'm not going to put January's rent because I didn't pay January's rent payment on the balance on the P&L, and I paid two payments in February. You still have to put January's through it and say it as a payable, and so that you can make sure that you have rent every month and things along those lines. That's what that's all about.
Okay.
All right. If you have negative gross margins, that's basically saying you bought a part for $1 and you sold it for 50 cents. And none of you do that. So that goes back to me when we talked about apples and oranges and talked about the fact that, you know, if you have revenues in 1 month and expenses in another month, the month that you have revenues and no expenses, your gross margin will be extremely high. And the month that you have expenses and no revenue, you may have a negative gross margin or a very low gross margin. You want to make sure that your gross margin stays consistent because that means you're pricing everything consistently. So that's what's there. All right. And we talked about inventory. Inventory is a bet. Make sure you're turning it over. Make sure there's nothing that is sitting in your warehouses or, you know, for those of you who do maintenance on your trucks. All right. This one is really important. All right. So every month you print out an accounts receivable aging report, and every month print out an accounts payable aging report. These must match your accounts receivable balance sheet and the accounts payable on your balance sheet. If somebody's going to steal from you, this is the easiest way to do it. And I am serious about this. They will play games with journal entries and play with your receivables on your balance sheet and pay with your payables on your balance sheet. And if you only look at the aging reports, you never look at the number on your balance sheet, they could be stealing you blind. Not that I want them to, but, you know, make sure that they match. It's really, really, really that they match. And if they don't match, find out why. Somebody's played games. Usually is somebody's playing games with journalists. All right. And then if your net profit doesn't match your current retained earnings. So if you have a net profit at the end of July, that net profit should match the net profit, the current retained earnings on your balance sheet. If it doesn't, then somebody, again, is playing games. They're playing games with journaling. Be very careful. These are just very quick and easy things that you can go to your bookkeeper with and say, hey, my accounts receivable and my accounts payable don't match the values on the balance sheet. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably going to get a deer in the headlight there. It's like, oh, crap. They know what's going on here. And they have to fix it and figure it out. Or, you know, somebody's going to get white-faced or whatever else it is. You're going to find out whether somebody really knows what they're doing or not. And you're going to find out whether somebody's stealing from you. Unfortunately, I hope it is not the latter. All right. So those are ways, 97 seconds or less, to figure out if your financial statements are wrong. So let me go through them really quickly again, just so that you have it. All right. You have to be on an accrual basis rather than cash basis. And that's usually a little sign on upper left or upper right of your financial statement that says cash basis or accrual basis. Balance sheet doesn't balance, negative cash on your balance sheet, negative payroll taxes on your balance sheet, negative loan payments on your balance sheet, and there's no inventory. Inventory is the same number every month. No rent or usually high rent on your P&L. Negative or unusually high or low gross margins. Okay, and then your accounts receivable and accounts payable aging reports don't match values on your balance sheet, and your net profits don't match the current. That's it. Questions?
Okay. So, well, without the technology issues that we've had here, are there any questions, you know, for Ruth on this? While we're waiting to see if there are any questions, you know, when I download this and get it set to go back online, to put it up for you guys, I will obviously edit out the section, you know, the gap where we had in there, so you don't have to watch that again.
Yeah, so. I apologize for technology. I love technology.
Yeah.
I hate technology.
We all do. We all do. So far, I don't see any questions.
Good. They got it all. I expect perfect P&Ls.
That's good. You know, I'll tell you, go to your contact information. There we go. So, Tim asks, yes, absolutely, Tim. I will definitely notify you guys when it's posted and when the visuals are ready for you. If you need to reach Ruth, she is rking at ontheribbon.com. Those are her phone numbers. Here's a question. Good presentation. Where do we get your books? Are they on Amazon?
All of my books are on Amazon. They're also on Kindle.
Okay.
And the Courage, the Ugly Truth About Cash, and they're all eventually going to be on Audible. Right now, only several of them are. Right now, they're there, but you can get my books. If you want an autographed copy, call me on the phone, and I'm happy to sell one to you if you want the autographed copy.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's worth a whole lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, here's a balance sheet question. Uh-huh. Should the net worth portion of balance sheet increase over time? And do you have a sample balance sheet statement?
It's in all the books, and I'm happy to send whoever it is one. Just send me an email. It depends, because if you put all of your retained earnings, if you're profitable every single year, that goes into your balance sheet as retained earnings. And then what happens is if you don't take money out of the corporation or the company or whatever you are, then yes, your retained earnings increase every year. There are some people who take it out, take dollars out, which is totally up to you and your accountant, so that they keep the net worth section of the balance sheet exactly the same every year. So it kind of depends upon which way you're going, and that's a discussion you need to have with your CPA. Should I take money out and invest it or do whatever I want to do personally with it? Should I leave it in the company? And if I do, and you have a profitable year, yes, your net worth section will increase every year.
Okay. Do you recommend any online courses where you're taught to build P&L, balance sheet, cash flow statements? And I think somebody else also kind of asked that question. All right. So are there any online courses for this that you would recommend, or do you have anything?
To be perfectly honest, I'll tell you the story of a florist who was my very first customer. And Alice had hired a bookkeeping company to do her books, and they always had a positive number at the end of the month, and she just looked at it and said, okay, I'm making money, and then she ended up having cash flow problems. So I can't have cash flow problems. I'm I'm a COD. I mean, people pay us and everything else like that when they pick up the flowers. So she hired me, and I looked at her balance sheet, I mean, her financial, I said, and asked questions. She goes, I don't know. You don't know how to read these, do you? She said, nope. So I said, okay, go ask the people who are doing this for you. And it turned out whenever they didn't know what something was, they put it in miscellaneous sales, which totally inflated her P&L. And so according to her, she spent the two most miserable months of her entire life under learning and took a course at a community college to understand P&L's balance sheet, you know, basically what they were. And she now has somebody else doing her books. She absolutely hated it. But she looks at her numbers every month. That's why I said in the beginning that you can delegate the day-to-day, but you can't abdicate looking at them every month. So if you can take a course, you know, I don't know whether you can now or not, in a community college and take a couple of evenings there. I have a class called Make Your Financial Statements Fun and Sexy. It does not tell you how to be a bookkeeper. It tells you how to review financial statements and those types of things. So I have that type of thing too.
You do?
Yeah.
So they could reach out to you and
they can reach out to me if they want to take
reach
that.
Reach out to Ruth. Okay. Yeah. You mentioned the balance sheet is a scorecard. Do you have an example? Again, somebody else asked that question too, an example of a balance sheet. It's in your book, right?
It's in the book.
Which book?
It's in The Courage to Be Profitable. Courage to Be Profitable is how to get and stay profitable in less than 30 minutes a month.
Okay, Courage to Be Profitable.
Yeah, Wealth is the sequel to The Courage to Be Profitable. If you're going to get to a book, get that one first.
Okay.
And then Profitable Wealth.
Do you have any... You have a recommendation for an online platform to maintain financials other than QuickBooks?
Most of the ones I know are proprietary software for specific industries. There's several out there. I do not know whether it would be good for any of you, but there's one called ServiceTitan out there.
There's one called what?
ServiceTitan.
ServiceTitans?
T-I-T-A-N, it's E-R-B-I-C. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, so there's some, and I don't know whether anybody's written proprietary software for you guys, but they may have. But QuickBooks is ubiquitous. You might also want to look at Sage. Many years ago, they bought Peachtree Accounting, and Sage is probably the biggest competitor to QuickBooks. They do a lot of things, and they can manufacturing things really, really, really well. But that would be my only general one instead of QuickBooks. Sage does their own accounting. I personally use Sage. I have a lot of my clients who do use QuickBooks.
Okay. Would you say you find more discrepancies in an AR or AP aging report when checking that portion? Which one would you find more discrepancies in?
AR.
Okay. Accounts receivable then. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why are financial statements wrong if using cash basis?
Because what you're doing is you're not being able to do job costing correctly. On a cash basis, you're always profitable. And it doesn't matter. You could have, best way to describe it is there's no receivables and no payables on a cash basis. So the only time you write a check is if you actually got the money in the door. So let's assume that you're in a situation where you have all of these bills that have come in for various jobs and none of those jobs are profitable. Then you're in a situation you'll never know it because you only write a check when you get the money in to pay whatever bills you've got to pay. I'll give you a perfect example. One of my clients who is now retired, they've been around for a long time, started his business at zero, grew it to $2 million on cash. He had money in his pocket, everything was cool. If he could take discounts on his bills, everything was cool. And so he grew his company to $2 million and then growth stopped. And then he noticed over the next couple of months, he started not always being able to take his discount and not always being able to, you know, worry about payroll. And he goes, wait a minute, I'm a $2 million company. This should not be happening. It's never happened in the past. So to make a long story short, he was losing a nickel for every dollar he took in the door for 12 years. No joke. Now, the growth masked the loss because he got more and more cash in the door because every time he sold something, he got the money in, you know, and it just, you know, kept going. The money from one job started the next job. And so you're not going to see a nickel very fast until things start slowing down. And that's why you can't do cash. You have to know what your true profitability is. You have to know what your true job cost is. The only way you can do that is if you're on an accrual basis and have true receivables and payables. And obviously enter them into the computer and into your software.
Yeah, it sounded like he had his own pyramid scheme for himself. QuickBooks refers to equity and is a negative number. Is this the net worth you're talking about, and should net worth be negative?
Okay. Here's the deal. It's really not negative, all right? Debit is left side, credit is right side. Debit has a tendency to be positive and credit has a tendency to be negative. So if you look at it from a strictly bookkeeping perspective, all of your assets are positive and all of your liabilities and net worth are negative. There really and truly are no positive and negative numbers. That's a misnomer that QuickBooks does. It literally is left side, right side. And my first accounting professor made that very clear on his first day of class, that there are really no negative numbers and there are no positive numbers. Unless you are actually, I mean, you can have negative numbers, i.e. you lost money, but generally it's considered right side versus left side. So assets, for all intents and purposes, are always positive on the debit side, unless you have less depreciation on the asset side of the balance sheet. On the liability side of the balance sheet, it looks positive on your balance sheet. But if you look at the true accounting for it and the bookkeeping for it, the debit is left side and the credit is right side. So if you have a negative on your liability side, that means you owe the company or you owe the banker money or you owe the Fed's money or something along the line, which means that it's actually positive rather than negative. You want the truest accounting form of the verb. And now I'm getting into something that's esoteric.
Yeah. And, if you need more information about that, Charles, just reach out to Ruth,
And we'll do it on the phone. We're not going to do it in an email simply because it's really hard to explain in an email.
Yeah. Okay. Last question. And then we got to cut this off. If you're looking at a large corporation to understand their future potential, what areas would you put the most emphasis on? Thinking from the perspective that they might be a customer. So,
okay.
All right.
If they give you their P&L's balance sheet, you're going to do something called working capital. And working capital is current assets minus current liabilities. And you're going to take that number and divide by 10. And you're going to see what the number is. And that will tell you whether they're growing too fast or not growing too fast. That also depends upon the industry. So what I would do is I'd look at their working capital and make sure it's positive, which is current assets minus current liability. I would also look at their current ratio and make sure it's over about 1.5-2 and make sure that it is also increasing because that means their profitability is increasing. And how much cash do they have on their balance sheet? If they have no cash and their current ratio their accounts receivable to accounts payable is negative, run as fast as you possibly can for them, simply because they're robbing Peter to pay Paul to pay their bills.
Yeah, that's probably what he's looking at is what's their future potential as a customer. So so that's a good question. I think that's a good question. Ruth King, thank you so much. So sorry you had technical problems there. No excuses. Implement and
get results.
I hope you got her contact information. But again, I will email everybody, letting you know when the visual when everything is ready. And of course, I will also include Ruth's information in there, and where to get the book and stuff like that. So thank you again, Ruth. I'm glad I'm in marketing and branding.
So you make K do your numbers, huh?
That's Yes, yeah, that's exactly right. So thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us and for putting up with the tech problems. It's been a long time since we had any of those, but sometimes that happens. So this is Steve Miller, better known as Kelly's dad and marketing gunslinger, and we'll be back again next month. Thank you again very, very much, Ruth. And we'll see everybody. Always remember, be uncopyable. Bye.
Bye.